Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. Today we are dual streaming. We are on Zoom, and we are also open for inpatient. Tell them I was a nurse, right? In person meetings as well. And I will now turn the meeting over to the student who will do our introductory remarks.
Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy, while professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification and practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. Soul bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity, without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by studying otherwise, be the better able to help and teach others. True theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. The announcements at the Philadelphia Lodge for Sunday, April 10th, 2022. Lodge meetings are held to disseminate the philosophy of theosophy, to keep the teachings ever before the public for those who might be in search of them. Meetings are open to the public, and all people are invited to attend. The common ground, the common unifying force among all the lodges, wherever they are located in the world, is a declaration. All are united, yet all are autonomous. Voluntary contributions of time, money, and work are activities which sustain the lodges. Those who might be interested in volunteering or have questions about volunteering are encouraged to contact the lodges. A listing of lodges can be found on the Phoenix website. The purchase of straight-line theosophical materials may be purchased from Theosophy Company in Los Angeles, California. Purchased directly from many of the lodges, including from the Philadelphia Lodge on Sunday mornings, or downloaded from the Phoenix, Arizona website. Participants are asked to please address all comments to the person chairing the meeting. Philadelphia Lodge holds 3 weekly meetings to disseminate the teachings of theosophy on Sundays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. Sunday morning meeting begins at 11 and ends at 12 noon. Theosophy Hall opens at 10:30. Each Sunday, some part of a monthly umbrella theme is presented in the format of a forum, lecture, or panel discussion. Theme for April, the science and art of communication. Last Sunday's panel discussed the creative potency of sound and speech. Today, the lecture will be words as symbols of ideas. And next Sunday, April 17th, the panel will discuss the meaning and symbols of Easter. Sunday meetings are recorded and podcasts are available at the Philadelphia website. Sunday meeting is the only on-site Zoom accessible meeting. On Wednesday evenings, there's a study class which meets from 7:30 to 8:45. We are presently continuing our studies in The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. This month, the month of April, we are studying the themes of cycles and evolution. Last Wednesday, the topic was cycles, return of ancient civilizations, and this Wednesday, we will study cycles, physical and historical. Both are in Chapter 13. Friday evening roundtable is an informal gathering to discuss various philosophical ideas, and presently we are discussing the book, The Heart Doctrine, by William Q. Judge. The articles being discussed are under the umbrella theme, About the Masters. Last Friday, the discussion was on authorship of the secret doctrine, and this Friday, April 15th, the discussion will be on the topic, Will Master's Help Be Withdrawn in 1898 until 1975? The Wednesday and Friday meetings continue to be accessible through Zoom. Please mark your calendars to attend two special meetings that are coming up. The one on May 8th is White Lotus Day. Presentation will be Blavatsky and Theosophy. The second meeting is June 22nd, ULT Day. Topic, United Lodge of Theosophists, Mission and Future. And that concludes the general announcements. Next, we will do a reading, which will be followed by today's lecture. This reading is from the Bhagavad Gita, rendering by William Q. Judge, Chapter 2, entitled Devotion Through Application to Speculative Doctrines. Arjuna. What, O Kishava, is the description of that wise and devoted man who is fixed in contemplation and confirmed in spiritual knowledge? What may such a sage declare? Where may he dwell? Does he move and act like other men? Krishna. A man is said to be confirmed in spiritual knowledge when he forsaketh every desire which entereth into his heart, and of himself is happy and content in the self. His mind is undisturbed in adversity. He is happy and contented in prosperity. And he is a stranger to anxiety, fear, and anger. Such a man is called a Muni. When in every condition he receives each event, whether favorable or unfavorable, with an equal mind, which neither lacks nor dislikes, his wisdom is established. And, having met good or evil, neither rejoices at the one, nor is cast down by the other. He is confirmed in spiritual knowledge when, like the tortoise, he can draw in all his senses and restrain them from their wanted purposes. The hungry man loses sight of every other object but the gratification of his appetite. And when he is become acquainted with the Supreme, he loses all taste for objects of whatever kind. The tumultuous senses and organs hurry away by force the heart even of the wise man who striveth after perfection. Let a man restraining all these remain in devotion, at rest in me, his true self. For he who hath his senses and organs in control possesses spiritual knowledge. Today's topic, words as symbols of ideas.
We have been talking this month about science and the art of communication. So, words as symbols of ideals. What are we to think of this? What are our ideals? Well, we turn again to the Bhagavad Gita. And that it states in chapter 17, you know, Arjuna is asking, what is that the state of man who, while they neglect the precepts of the scriptures, yet worship in faith? And Krishna tells Arjuna that the faith of mortals is of three kinds and is born from their own disposition. It is the quality of sattva, action, rajas, and indifference, tamas. Got the quality of truth, sattva, action, rajas, and indifference, tamas. Hear now what those are. The faith of each one, O son of Bharata, proceeds from the sattva quality, the embodied soul being gifted with faith. Each man is of same nature as that ideal on which his faith is fixed. So what is it that we believe? What is our faith fixed upon? Well, it's said that, you know, that as we grow, we bring over those tendencies from past lives. So we would say that this faith is something that we have possessed in the past and possess again now. And being a person of faith, what is it that we have faith in? In darkness, in the material world, or in action, in the everyday activity of life, and the achievements of a busy society, or in a belief that all life is of godlike quality, and that man is at the pinnacle of that evolution, and therefore responsible for all of life below him. That there is no God other than that which man sees within himself and knows within himself. So, how are words symbols of that ideal? Well, our speech belies our ideals. How we act and how we talk is an indication of the ideals that we hold to be true. We cannot hide what we believe. In fact, it is stated that when we believe and we apply that belief, it builds up that quality of the heart, which is conveyed when we speak and possesses transforming power. So the outside world is transformed by speech, by the word made flesh. the great mystery of the coming forth of sound, of vibration, of the Logos, of man. Are we the Word made flesh? Are we these gods in potential? What ideal do we possess? Well, we are told that the greatest ideal that we can consider are that of the Mahatmas. But then we say, well, are the Mahatmas an ideal? Yes. For ideals always seem to precede us. We can never reach that ideal. So Mahatmas are ideals, but they're also a fact. For there are those perfected ones who have been able to overcome their lower nature and to pull aside that veil into that other realm of spiritual life, into that unseen world. Perfection means a control over one's lower nature so that the higher can shine forth. So what is our ideal? God. We can use that term, but we define it by the ideal in which we hold. Do we have our God is the material world and darkness and pain and suffering are the realities of that? Or do we have a faith or an ideal and that there is higher beings that lie outside of us? Or do we have a knowledge of that light that lies within, that knowledge that lies within? Our ideal is not to become intellectually bound by this philosophy, but have our heart opened to these ideas. These ideals, these words of compassion, of kindness, of love, are these ideals in the world we see, where we live? We know that they are ideals. But again, it's what do you believe is true? We are what we think. We create what we speak. There's a couple passages in the Secret Doctrine that speak volumes about this idea of speech, about words, and the power that they possess. We take a passage from the Secret Doctrine, and it reads as follows. Because the spoken word has a potency unknown to, unsuspected, and disbelieved in by the modern sages, because sound and rhythm are closely related to the four elements of the ancients, And because such or another vibration in the air is sure to awaken corresponding powers, union which produces good or bad results, as the case may be. No student was ever allowed to recite historical, religious, or any real event in so many unmistakable words, lest the powers connected with the event should be once more attracted. This is only read so that we can reinforce in ourselves the power of the word. We can look through the secret doctrine, and it talks about the word. And the word made flesh. That really, words are impressions in the astral. They're the beginning of creation on that plane of cause. We live on the plane of effect. We live in a world that is filled with images, and we are impressed by those images. We are always striving, each of us is striving for an example on which to live by. That is why, as we, from youth, we admire those around us. And we have our heroes, our those that we see as brave and exemplify courage and skill. And to them, we look to as role models. But we are warned to put our faith, to put our ideals in that of other humans is fraught with danger, because we are only human and we are oftentimes led by our lower nature and to committing sins of omission more than even of commission. We are beings of extraordinary power. We just don't realize it. But until we do, we are told to heed the lessons of karma. That we are responsible for every thought, word, and deed. Each word that is uttered forms the life that we live. The very name that we possess has great bearing on our life that we live. Sound is one of the characteristics of that astral plane. We need to remember that we are complex beings, that we affect and are affected by all of life, and that we are able to affect life. And we do, by the thoughts, by the words, and by our deeds. We become that ideal on which our faith is fixed. So we need to examine, what do we have faith in? We are told that there is only one thing that we should rely on. That is the self within. Our higher nature, that Krishna, that Mahatma, that dwells within us. And that our job, or our duty on this plane, is to ever quiet that animal nature so that that human and godlike nature can manifest itself. We do that by uttering words to elevate our thought of universal brotherhood, of Mahatmas, of God. We say to ourselves, what is the vibration that we put out into the world? What is our vibration? We know that the earth has a vibration. We can hear it when we go into the forest, or we stand on a far hill besides a busy city. It's that fa, that harmony, that vibration. Words are spoken, but words are written down. Each form a vibration. We are given aids in helping us to create harmonious vibration. We have mantras. We have words. We have feelings. We are told in these esoteric teachings that the sound of the universe can be understood and heard in the word Om. But to stand and say that word, to repeat it in endless, endless vibration, will have no meaning unless the intention or the ideas behind what that word means are considered and dwelt upon while uttering it. A is the first letter of the alphabet, the beginning of sound. Zero is the beginning of number, but numbers come from no thing, from the unknown. Consider what our ideals are. Dwell upon those ideals. And from there, our speech will utter these ideals. But we must be confirmed in what we believe. We must become true seekers after truth. And through words and deeds, we can transform the world. For we are moving forward. The mind is opening. The character of the race is changing. Be a pilgrim soul and become a companion to those who have put this or put these ideas before the public. We'll open up our class this morning to some of the ideas that you may have about words as symbols of ideals. Our purpose this morning was not to fill your idea, your mind with ideas, but to make you think about ideas. Now, what are yours? SL.
An interesting idea presented was that our ideals continually precede us. It's hard to reach up to our ultimate ideals. And so it seems to be the same with words, being that they're symbols. They're not the ideals, they're our best representation of them. So the task of bringing our words into harmony with our ideals using a limited language such as English, as it is quite a task. So any thoughts as to how we can work on our language or our words to continuously elevate them to represent at least the ideal we have in mind? Mute, please. Unmute, please.
Well, the comment alludes to the fact of language. And English is a language of trade, of commerce, of a material world trying to evolve. Well, within that language is another language, a language of the soul. Now, there are languages that exist that are more in tune with the heart and with those spiritual aspects of being. But we, as being involved in this material world, what are some of the words that will lift us up? Well, I'm sure some of us can think of them. Compassion, love, patience, detachment or indifference. And all these are just simply words, but they elevate us. They are in themselves our ideals, something that we are ever striving to accomplish. So like the virtues that we've talked about through the year are simply ideals in which we try to live by. SL, follow up.
Yes, to follow up on that, it would seem that a daily reading and perhaps even reciting out loud of the devotional books, which are renditions in the English language from very ancient sources of different languages, by reading those, attending to the words that are used, we develop a toolbox or a bag of ideas and expressions that we can use in our everyday lives in communicating with people.
Yes, this comment came up in our Friday class, is that one thing that we can do, I think it was suggested in that class, that we read the Secret Doctrine, read one page, then read it out loud, and then explain it to that friend that's in the room, that imaginary friend that we talk to all the time, but explain it to him or her. We see that the spoken word is very magnetic. It attracts to us similar ideas. MHW, excuse me.
Yes, we have a question here at Theosophy Hall.
The speaker used the phrase, we are not to be intellectually bound by these ideas. we always thought that the intellect was our friend. Could the speaker explain?
The question having to do with are we intellectually bound, and isn't the intellect a positive source for us for learning?
Well, the intellect is well, the intellect is quite important. It is our way of gathering knowledge. That knowledge is very important. That spiritual knowledge is something we need to attain. But how do we attain it? By integrating it with the heart. So that we are not bound just by the intellect. We are bound by the intellect and the heart, by compassion, by kindness. You know, our duty is to help free humanity from its suffering. And that can only be done by people understanding who and what they are. You know, we're not just mind beings, but we are living, throbbing entities of influence, of energy that is magnified by our voice.
We have a chat.
Could you please read?
Sure. In the beginning was the Word, John 1:1. What does that mean? Was that word Om?
The question is, in the beginning, there was that. There was that vibration, that great breath, that beginning, that Brahma, that great coming forth, that great sustaining of that breath, Vishnu, and the ending of that breath, Shiva. That word is made flesh. What does that mean? What do we think? We are asked, yes, Tom, yes, TK.
Yeah, our understanding is those are two identical ideas in Christianity, both in Christianity and in Buddhism. The word, the verbum, is the first emanation from the unknowable. It's the same as, that's our understanding.
Yes, that is a correct understanding. It is the Word made flesh. It is the beginning of all material existence. SL.
If we examine our speech and the words we make, we notice that we cannot utter any word without it being a control of the breath and the motion moving through our mouth, producing vibration. And so in microcosm, we are the logos acting on this plane, just as there is that cosmic logos, which is the vehicle, the universal vehicle through which that eternal breath and motion and vibration can manifest in the universe.
That idea is quite daunting. Quite daunting. Because that makes us the creators of the universe. And the universe in which we live is what we have created. You know, if you look at that idea of the verbum, the word, the first vibration uttered by the universe, it is how everything has come into existence. It is everything is vibration. Everything is vibration to some degree. The colors of the rainbow are all different vibrations. The notes on a musical scale are all different vibrations. So we are putting out a vibration. And that vibration is really an expression of the ideals that we hold, the words that we use to express our thoughts. It is a fact that we are the creators of the world in which we live, that what we see has been created by us. MHW.
Well, it is daunting when we think of the power that humans have in regards to these vibrations, because we know that in regards to the astral, that the way we think, the way we feel, the way we speak, especially if we speak in anger, that it populates the astral with all of these negative vibrations. And we read in the ocean about how man is considered to be a dynamo, and that these vibrations that we're all putting out can affect the earth as we know it.
Well, it does affect the earth as we know it. Not that it can, it does. That we are creating the circumstances of our own life, individually and collectively. You know, SL, you had your hand up.
To go back to that idea about the intellect and not being bound to it, to what extent it's our friend and so forth. If we're speaking with another human being and we are speaking to them from the perspective of our intellectual understanding, using words that reflect our intellectual understanding, or we are speaking to them from the point of view of our heart understanding of something, will the words we use, depending on whether it's coming from our intellect or our heart, have a different vibration? Will they have a different effect or impact on the listener?
Well, we certainly know that if we apply what we believe, it builds a heart force, which is conveyed when we speak and possesses transforming power. If we don't believe what we say, and belief means that we don't apply it, we don't make it a living part of our life, the effect is much different. If it is just words that are being repeated, that we hear, that we read, we know that happens in theosophy a lot. That when we first come to it, whoa, and we just study and read and we try to repeat what we've read and we try to elevate our thought. But eventually it happens that We slowly integrate these ideas into our speech. And that's why, you know, the exercise of reading the Bhagavad Gita aloud, the reading the Voice of the Silence aloud, or reading the Secret Doctrine aloud. It's a way of application through word and deed. So we are evolving, and we are trying to find as many aids that we can use to help us evolve into a flower and not to die on the vine, but to be ever striving upward. And what is that upward? Love thy neighbor as thyself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Be kind, be loving, be compassionate. That is our duty. SL?
So far, we've focused on our own words as expressing our ideas, But when we find ourselves in social intercourse with friends and family, or we find ourselves listening to the media, whether it's the news, whether it's a movie, whether it's music, whatever it is, a lecture, should not the words we allow ourselves to listen to or allow to pass also reflect our ideals? Do we have to be selective in what we listen to?
Well, that's what makes us human beings. We have to choose. Life is filled with choices. And we come to learn that what we listen to, what we look at, becomes a part of our very being, whether we want it to or not. So what we listen to, what we watch, we need to discriminate. That which is better for the best. Always trying to clarify in the world in which we live our ideals. Do we live those ideals? Well, it's difficult to live those ideals if we view violence, if we view human weakness as been glorified. You know, it's reflection of our own being. Life is but a mirror for us. It reflects back to us what we see in ourselves. MHW.
Isn't that why we're encouraged to be very choosy as to the type of people that we choose to be with? And we talk about going to concerts or lectures or maybe, you know, other types of gatherings that we are not together with like-minded people, because we don't know what the vibrations will be that will be coming from them, and that we should be very discriminating.
Yes, we should be very discriminating, but we should always have in our heart a willingness to help and be of good cheer. Have good intentions. That is our best protection. That it's difficult being out in the world with the influences that are floating about. And as you study this philosophy, you begin to understand, to feel what those influences are. That becomes our barometer. You know, we know when we're in a room with people that hate. We know it. We feel it. That are people that are annoyed with the shortcomings of others and always sees that which is bad. That's what's at fault. Always fault finding. We know. We don't want to be around that. So yes, but sometimes we can't avoid it. So we have to be positive. When negative things are said, do you have a positive comeback? Do you have a positive comment? SL?
When is silence a symbol or expression of our ideals?
When is silence a symbol of our ideals? Well, when we are gathered with people and they start talking about someone and talking about their shortcomings, talking about this, talking about that. Silence is probably our only answer. Because what we say only adds to that. And we don't want to add to it. We don't want to contribute to the denigration of anyone. So gossip is one of those things, those vibrations that is only combated by silence. Or when the opportunity arises, just defend the person that's being so slandered if one knows it not to be true. And to speak, I do not know him to be of that nature. But as was stated, silence is sometimes our best unspoken word. MHW?
To go along with that, when somebody is gossiping or especially is angry and maybe is attacking you, oftentimes, you know, you can use silence, the pause. The pause is a very important thing. And then it seems like if you can come back in a quiet way, in a quiet manner, and not react angrily, oftentimes that will just diffuse the person who is attacking.
And that's very interesting, because how do we control our lower nature, our personality? Why do we oftentimes strike back? Because our personality was wounded. As was suggested, how great is one's character that one can stand in front of someone who is denigrating them, calling them names, yelling profanities at them, and not strike back? It takes someone of great character, great patience, great love. SL?
In a discussion, especially one where there are differences of individual opinion, even if there's no anger or contention, is there any intrinsic value to having the last word?
Well, what is the last word? What is the last word? Is it our yearning to have the last word? Is there a last word? There's never a last word. It's mostly it's our personality pushing itself forward, that it knows that perhaps you don't quite understand yet. So there's no need to have the last word. The last word is the one which you have spoken.
PK had to stand up.
Yes, please.
We were just going to say, you know, this idea of the last word is not something that we find with, that we remember seeing with children. We see it with adults, and it's about the most immature thing an adult can do.
Well, we would take...
Let it go.
We would take umbrage with that, because I think... humans can do a lot of silly things, and that being just one of them. But yes, we are a very interesting species of human beings that are trying to express our humanness and not our animal nature. Because, why? We are gods within, in potential. We have the potential of being a Mahatma, a perfected being. Not now, but in lives to come. We do not live for today. We live for tomorrow. MHW?
So what is it? We were all just laughing. So what is it about humor that seems to be able to, you know, break a difficult situation that makes us feel good? What is it about humor?
We don't take ourselves that seriously. That the humor is in the foibles of life and the things that we do. We can look back on our life and gasp, but we need to laugh about it because we did not understand. We did not know. But now that we know, our karmic responsibility is that much greater. What we did in ignorance is no longer justifiable in our knowledge. So we have to become the chooser. We are the chooser. We have to choose the better for the dearer. That which is to the benefit of humanity, to each other, to our brothers and sisters, to those that we love and those that we don't love. How do we benefit the world and help us to lift ourselves out of this fire of ignorance and selfishness into a world of light and selflessness? What words can we express to each other? I love you. What can someone say to you that is meaningful? We all have words, how we express our feelings for each other. But behind those words are our intention. Our intention to love and honor each other with good intentions. So that tomorrow you will be my helper, my guide, so that we help each other along this path. Through word, well, through thought, through word, and through deed. We are the font of all the manifested world. Know that and understand that. That's spiritual knowledge. Well, we've been able to talk about this idea for 1 hour. But we need to carry these ideas with us in our pocket all week long. And every once in a while during the day, reach into our pocket and bring out one of these ideas and consider it. Yeah, just in our daily activity. Just instead of wondering about what we're going to eat, or when we're going to nap, or when we're going to do this, or when we're going to do that. Think about words that will uplift us. We as Theosophists wish you a good week, a good day, but also a good life. Our meeting adjourned.
Bye, everybody.